friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin in the Netherlands, where 36-year-old Swiss tennis star Roger Federer is one win away from becoming the oldest world number one in ATP Tour history. Federer beat German opponent Philipp Kohlschreiber in straight sets 7-6 and 7-5 to reach the quarterfinals at the Rotterdam Open. If Federer can beat local favorite Robin Haas of the Netherlands on Friday, he'll overtake Spanish star Rafael Nadal at the top of the rankings and reclaim the world number one ranking for the first time since November 2012. Now, the current men's record for oldest world number one in tennis belongs to the now retired American Andre Agassi, who was 33 years old when he was at the top of the tennis rankings. And the current women's record belongs to another American, Serena Williams, who was 35 years old when she was world number one. For our VOA tennis fans keeping score, Serena recently returned to competitive tennis at the Fed Cup team tournament after being off the courts for more than a year after giving birth to her daughter. Getting back to Roger Federer, if he wins on Friday, he'll also set another record for the longest gap, 5 years and 106 days between periods as world number one. Roger won his record-extending 20th career Grand Slam singles title, the most in history for a male player, at last month's Australian Open. Federer has already spent a record 302 career weeks at world number one.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association is celebrating and showcasing its best players this weekend in Los Angeles, California. On Sunday, the NBA will hold its 67th annual All-Star Game at the Staples Center Arena in Los Angeles, the home court for two NBA clubs, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Clippers. This year, the starters for the All-Star Game were chosen by not only the fans, but also by the media and current NBA players. LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers and Stephen Curry of the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors were named as captains of the East and West All-Star teams, as LeBron and Steph were the leading vote-getters from the East and the West, respectively. And then LeBron and Steph held a draft of players for their All-Star teams on Sunday. Let's take a quick look now at their starting lineups. Team LeBron has LeBron, of course, as well as Kevin Durant of the Golden State Warriors, Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, DeMarcus Cousins of the Pelicans, and Kyrie Irving of the Boston Celtics. Cousins, though, suffered a season-ending injury ahead of the All-Star game, and Paul George of the Oklahoma City Thunder was named as his replacement. Turning to Team Stephen, we have Stephen Curry, of course, from the league champion Warriors, DeMar DeRozan of the Toronto Raptors, James Harden of the Houston Rockets, and yes, Harden is still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, and we have two All-Stars with ties to Africa, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks and Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. Giannis was born in Athens, Greece, the son of Nigerian parents, and Joel Embiid is from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. The All-Star Game is part of a weekend of All-Star events in Los Angeles. There's also a celebrity game later Friday night, a rising stars game, a skills challenge, a three-point shooting contest, and a slam dunk contest. In more NBA news, Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr is among those in the league calling for U.S. gun reform in the wake of this week's school shooting in Florida that killed at least 17 people.
Well, nothing has been done. It doesn't seem to matter to our government that children are being shot to death day after day in schools. It doesn't matter that people are being shot at a concert, at a movie theater. It's not enough, apparently, to move our leadership, our government, the people who are running this country, to actually do anything. And that's demoralizing. But we can do something about it. We can vote people in who actually have the courage to protect people's lives and not just bow down to the NRA because they've financed their campaign for them. So hopefully we'll find enough people, first of all, to vote good people in, but hopefully we can find enough people with courage to actually help our citizens remain safe and focus on the real safety issues, not building some stupid wall for billions of dollars that has nothing to do with our safety, but actually protecting us from what truly is dangerous, which is maniacs with semi-automatic weapons, just slaughtering our children. It's disgusting.
For social media reaction to Steve Kerr's comments, we're joined once again by my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, Sonny. Yes, Twitter followers responded with their own reactions to Steve Kerr's comments. One wrote, "All the shootings are President Trump's fault. He has been in office for 1 year. Once again, liberals use anything they can to talk bad about Trump. Start with fixing the broken families in America." Another follower responded with this, "Understand Steve Kerr's frustration, but instead of just bashing Trump and spouting generalities, let's hear the exact words in a bill that would stop this. Easy to be a critic, but you have to come up with real solutions." And this reaction, "I'm from a poor third world country, and I can remember only one shooting like this in 32 years, and it was a national tragedy. All the country stopped for respect. Yesterday, after all these kids died, you had NBA on all night. That's because your country is messed up." The writer using much stronger language in that final point. Another writer adds to that tweet, "It almost feels like people outside your borders are more frustrated with the handling of U.S. gun violence than actual U.S. citizens. That, to me, is the most frightening aspect. It's like this country rolled over and gave up." Those reactions from followers on Twitter expressing their thoughts and frustrations following the school shooting in Parkland, Florida on Thursday. As Sonny mentioned, Steve Kerr is the coach for the Golden State Warriors, who have the NBA's second-best record at the All-Star break. The Houston Rockets, who have won 10 games in a row, have the NBA's best record, and Twitter responded, "10 in a row. I have them at 20 in a row and a franchise record. As long as they stay healthy, they should not lose more than two more games the rest of regulation. Hashtag make history." The All-Star festivities start later Friday night in Los Angeles, California. Before I go, here's an Olympic update. On Thursday, I told you about Akwasi Frimpong, the first Olympic athlete to represent Ghana in the skeleton event. Well, he ended his run last night, finishing in last place. And while he may have lost his chance for a medal, he hasn't lost any fans. This tweeter wrote, "Last place in the Olympics is far more than most people will ever achieve in a sport." Ain't that the truth? And finally, this tweet, "Even winning is subjective. Friend and former student Akwasi Frimpong. last place in Olympic skeleton today, but a massive success in realizing a dream. So proud of you, Akwasi. Through ambition and dedication, you turned the impossible into reality. Well, I will leave it there. There's lots of sports happening this weekend, and I'll have reactions for you next week. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen, and have a nice weekend. We'll have more Olympic news in just a few minutes from my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now from Abuja, Nigeria, with a package of African football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Former Super Eagles of Nigeria coach Sunday Oliseh has said that he was sacked from his job at Fortuna Sittard because he refused to participate in legal activities at the club, a claim the club denied on Thursday. The 43-year-old was suspended on Wednesday for what the club said was unacceptable actions. In response, Sunday Oliseh claimed the club wanted him to violate the law. The football club are saying that they will be taking legal advice and looking to sack Oliseh. Dutch second-tier side Fortuna Sittard decided to suspend coach Sunday Oliseh following bad behavior by the coach. Staying with football news, the representatives of South Sudan engaged for the Interclubs 2018 season. Al Salam Wau and Al Hilal Juba have been eliminated for failing to show up for their respective matches of the first leg of the preliminary round of the CAF Champions League. CAF Deputy General Secretary Anthony Bafour said in a later address to the South Sudan Football Association that Al Salam Wau FC and Al Hilal Juba are both considered losers, hence eliminated from the competitions they are engaged in respectively. Still staying with football news, FIFA faces scrutiny from human rights activists after allowing Egypt to select Chechnya as a World Cup team training camp site ahead of the 2018 Russia World Cup. Egypt's World Cup team will be in Grozny, the capital of Chechnya. It was selected by Egypt from a list of 67 options presented to the World Cup finalists. Human rights activists have expressed outrage at the decision by FIFA, with several governments alleging that the Chechen regime is complicit in political suppression, as well as discriminatory actions against women and sexual minorities. In women's football news, the South African under-17 women's team, the Bantwana, have arrived in Rabat, Morocco, to face the host nation on Saturday in the second leg of their second and final round of the 2018 FIFA under-17 World Cup qualifiers. The South Africans lead 5-1 from the first leg played at Dobbinsville Stadium on Sunday, February the 4th. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In Olympic news, two 17-year-old snowboarders from the United States were among the gold medal winners during the first week of the Winter Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Red Gerard and Chloe Kim earned headlines here in the United States and around the world for their Olympic performances. We'll hear from Red and Chloe now in this feature report by my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson, who also takes a look back at a few other Olympic highlights.
The Winter Olympics are off to an exciting and interesting start, with North Korean participation in the games being held to the south in Pyeongchang. The U.S. push for gold began with an unlikely champion, 17-year-old Red Gerard, who, like most of his rivals in men's slopestyle snowboarding, suffered falls during the finals. Gerard was in 11th place before embarking on his last run, a spectacular effort, twisting, turning, and flipping through the air before making perfect landings down the course. He told VOA after the event, that's all he was trying to do.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it. All worked out. I was just so happy to land a run and to make it on the podium. I'm ecstatic. I'm so excited.
Girard didn't think he would make the final at the Olympics, much less win gold. He says his more experienced and favored Canadian competitors were happy for his win in his first Olympic appearance.
They were all so excited. It was awesome. We're all friends out there, so I think they were just really happy that we all landed runs.
Then, exciting action on the highly technical and unforgiving luge track.
It was such a close race. It wasn't like any other Olympics.
Chris Madser captured the first men's singles luge medal in U.S. history to end a 54-year medal drought for Team USA. Madser put together two phenomenal runs to climb from fourth to third in runs 3 and 4. The next day, he told the media his achievement was just beginning to sink in.
I really didn't sleep very much. It's a bigger moment than I thought. It was huge.
Madser carried down the twisting, icy course, the dreams of so many U.S. sliders before him.
It's all about passion. It's about heart. That's what luge is. So I've had almost 60 years of people putting their lives, sacrificing so much into this. And for me to be that person that finally breaks through is, it really is, it's special for me, but it's just a way that I can say thanks to everyone that's put me into this position.
Back to snowboards, this time on the half pipe, where another 17-year-old American rode to gold. Chloe Kim, daughter of Korean immigrants, clinched the Olympic title with one run still remaining. She told the media the whole idea of being an Olympic champion had yet to set in.
Someone told me, congrats on the gold medal, and I was just like, don't really know what that means. So I definitely need to just sit with my family and kind of let it sink in, and a few tears will be shed for sure.
Her father gave up his job to chase his daughter's dream, and Kim said she was honored to repay him with a gold medal in Korea.
I got to represent both the U.S. and Korea today, and I'm very honored to have been able to do that.
Almost doubling her age is the ageless one, 31-year-old Sean White, winning snowboarding halfpipe gold in 2006, 2010, and now 2018.
I'm sure you can tell by my reactions at the bottom of the pipe, but this meant the world to me and my family and my team. Here doing it for USA again, not only to be an Olympian again, but to be a gold medalist again is just unreal.
White nearly had his Olympic hopes dashed in October when he hit his head on the edge of a half-pipe course in New Zealand and needed 62 stitches to close his wounds. Continuing his Olympic success may depend on his other love, skateboarding.
To be at the top of the game in snowboarding and then decide all of a sudden to let my competitors have 2 years of practice on me while I pursue skateboarding and then try to come back for the China Olympics, because that's something still on my radar. It's a big decision.
White earned the 100th overall U.S. gold medal in Winter Olympics history, and he is the first to win winter gold medals 12 years apart. Meanwhile, skiers had to wait for their chance at medals. High winds caused several postponements of alpine ski races. Double extreme skiing world champion Chris Davenport explains the dangers to skiers and snowboarders.
When the wind comes up, it can really get in the way of your performance. So it becomes not only mentally really challenging, but while you're in the air doing it and a gust comes up, it can actually be dangerous. It can blow you off your line. You can land on the lip or you land short, or in the case of a downhill ski race, landing too far, 100 meters down the hill and crashing.
Austrian ski star Marcel Hirscher says the longer, faster races are most at risk.
It will be more problem for the downhill and for the super-G than, for example, for slalom. In slalom, it is not that important that it is there is no wind. But for the downhill, it is nearly a need to have fair races that there is at least the same wind. At the moment, it is changing a lot.
Hirscher got his chance to go down the men's slalom course and claim the first gold medal of his career. Chris Davenport says the persistent conditions are threatening to disrupt the Olympic schedule.
The Olympics happens during a finite window of time. There is pressure to get these events off. You can't just keep postponing and postponing. So if it seems like you can run it and you can run it safely, you have to run it. And yeah, it might not be fair for all the athletes, but that's the way it is, and that's the way sports is.
IOC President Thomas Bach has no worries about the events.
The games are off to a great start, and these cancellations, they do not worry us at all. The international federations with whom we have talked, they have told us, listen, there is no reason to worry. We still have 2 weeks to go.
As for the possibility of warmer political winds blowing across the Korean Peninsula, Bach says the presence of the Olympics has already played its role.
Now, it's for politics to take over. You know, sport cannot create peace, and we cannot lead their political negotiations. We have sent this message that a dialogue, that negotiations can lead to a positive result. And now it's up to the political side to use this momentum.
Bach does plan to visit North Korea at Pyongyang's invitation after the Winter Olympics are over.
We'll continue also after the Olympic flame has extinguished.
Nathan Chen is a two-time U.S. national champion in men's singles figure skating. He is also the first international skater to complete 5 quadruple jumps in his long program. Chen is considered the top U.S. contender for a medal at this month's Olympic Games. Chen is the 18-year-old youngest son of Chinese immigrants. Born in Salt Lake City, Utah, he grew up in the shadow of the Olympic cauldron from the 2002 Winter Games. He fell in love with skating when his siblings took him to a public skating session when he was just 3 years old. Now, Chen is a 2-time U.S. national champion and one of a handful of skaters worldwide who can land quadruple jumps, 4 quick rotations in the air. Chen says he's not nervous or intimidated by the high-profile Olympic competition.
As soon as I'm on the ice and doing the program that I'm planning out to do, it'll be the same as any other competition. It'll be the same as practice, and that's what I'm focusing on.
Chen also trained in ballet and gymnastics as a child. He says his early dance training gave him a foundation for his moves and often helped his work on the ice. The men's singles competition begins Friday, February 16th. The gold medal will be awarded the next night, which also coincides with the celebration of the Chinese New Year. Nathan Chen says that he's proud to represent the United States as a Chinese American.
I'm very proud of myself for being able to go to the Olympics, represent Team USA as a Chinese American. Honestly, just really excited to get out there. I have to focus on myself before I even think about medals, so that's what I'll do.
And thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that spicy Olympic report. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. An Olympic update now on American snowboarder Lindsay Jacobellis. If you tuned into Thursday's show, you heard an interview that VOA's Adam Phillips did with Denise Shule, a mental coach who describes herself as a performance architect. Denise worked with Lindsay, a 2006 Olympic silver medalist in the women's snowboard cross event, ahead of Pyeongchang 2018. Well, in terms of Jacobellis' performance on Friday, she was leading most of the way, but ended up in fourth place and off the medals podium. Jacobellis is credited with raising the profile of this Olympic sport. 12 years ago in Italy, where she won the silver medal, Lindsay was again leading and a good 5 seconds ahead of the rest of the field as she moved toward the final jump in the gold medal race. She celebrated too soon, tweaked her board, and went tumbling when she landed. Lindsay limped in with a silver medal. Lindsay says she won't let that slip up in Italy 12 years ago define her. On Friday in Pyeongchang, the gold medal in the event went to Italy's Michaela Moioli. The silver went to France's Giulia Pereira de Sousa Mabolo. And the bronze medal went to 2014 Olympic champion Eva Samkova of the Czech Republic. Finally, on Thursday's show, my VOA colleague Gwen Ooten had social media reaction to Cristiano Ronaldo's 2-goal performance against Paris Saint-Germain in a first-leg UEFA Champions League match. Well, here's some more social media reaction. Mo Chroma, writing from Monrovia, Liberia, at my Facebook page, says, "The performance exhibited by Cristiano Ronaldo in the UEFA Champions League clearly states that he's the special one in the league. Mo says he thinks Real Madrid is proving their doubters wrong, including me, writes Mo. Thanks for writing, Mo. And that wraps up the February 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Skip Sisk. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia Michael Rayner opened a three-day regional U.S. alumni global health workshop on February 6, 2018, in Addis Ababa. The workshop brought together 22 alumni of U.S. government-sponsored exchange programs from Ethiopia, Lesotho, Malawi, Swaziland, and Tanzania, with the aim of sharing best practices for communicating public health information. The workshop also provided participants with tools to promote health-seeking behavior through the use of data and health communication strategies, and would support the development of a community of exchange alumni who are active in public health. Ambassador Rayner told the participants, "When we fail to provide for the health of our citizens, we feel the pain beyond the effects of illness itself. We see the harm when children are unable to attend school. We count the cost to families when parents are unable to work, and we endure the lost opportunity of lives cut short and of people marginalized or stigmatized by disease. You're here because you understand these challenges and are already making a difference." The ambassador added, "Like you, the United States has long recognized the importance of a cooperative and multidisciplinary approach to tackling global health challenges. Agencies as diverse as USAID, the Centers for Disease Control, the Peace Corps, the Department of Defense, and State Department's Refugee Bureau are working from a variety of angles to improve the health of people in Africa and around the world. All of these agencies are part of the U.S. Embassy team in Ethiopia, working in close coordination with the Ethiopian government, civil society, non-governmental organizations, and the donor community." Ambassador Rayner told the workshop participants that by the year 2050, Africa's population will exceed 2 billion people, with over 70% below the age of 35. Meeting the needs of 2 billion people is not something any of us can do on our own. The United States is committed to doing our part, but it'll take strong partners and strong leaders like you working here on the continent to get the job done. You will also need each other, which is why gatherings like this one are so important, said Ambassador Rayner. You certainly have my commitment of support and that of my colleagues and government.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.